away, and Theodren would fight you for him.
I'm considering bonding them, she sent back. Not bedding them, Andral, honestly. Besides, the Marin prefers men. Andral paused.
He does?
Of course he does. Haven't you been paying attention? Andral seemed baffled. Sometimes men could be surprisingly dense, even observant ones like Andral. Pavara embraced the one powers they reached the center of the group. Would she have time to make a gateway if something went wrong? She did not know the area, but so long as she traveled somewhere nearby, that wouldn't matter. She felt as if she was walking up to a noose and inspecting it, deciding how well it would fit her neck. A tall man in armor made of silvery discs with holes in the middle stood at the center of the group, dispensing orders. As they watched, a cup moved toward him through the air. Andral stiffened.
He's channeling Pavara.
Demondred, then? It must be. Pavara let Saidar flood her with its warm glow, letting it wash away emotions. The old man who had been leading them stepped forward and whispered something to Demondred. Despite the enhanced senses of Saidar, Pavara could not hear what was said. Demondred turned toward the group of them.
What is this? Has Mihail so quickly forgotten his orders?
Andral dropped to his knees, as did the others. Though it galled her, Pavara went down as well.
Great one, Andral said. We were merely...
No excuses!
Demondred yelled.
No games! Mihail is to take all of his dreadlords and destroy the White Tower forces. If I see any of you away from that fight, I'll make you wish I'd given you to the Trollocs instead.
Andral nodded eagerly, then began backing away. A whip of air Pavara could not see, although she could feel his pain through the bond, cracked him in the face. The rest of them followed after him, scrambling away with heads low. That was foolish and dangerous, Pavara thought at Andral.
And effective,
he replied, eyes ahead, hand to his cheek, blood seeping between the fingers.
We know Taim is on the battlefield for sure, and we know where to find him. Let's move.
Galad scrambled through a nightmare. He had known that the last battle might be the end of the world, but now he felt it. Channelers on both sides scourged one another, shaking Polov Heights. Lightning had struck so often that Galad could barely hear any longer, and his eyes watered from the pain of seeing blasts strike nearby. He threw himself up against the hillside, digging his shoulder into the ground and ducking for cover as a series of explosions ripped up the earth in front of him. His team, 12 men in tattered white cloaks, dove for cover with him. The White Tower's forces were strained under the attacks, but so were the Sharan forces. The power of so many channelers was incredible. The main bulk of White Tower infantry and a large number of Sharan troops fought here on the western heights. Galad stayed on the perimeter of that battle, looking for Sharan channelers alone or in small groups. In many places here, the battle lines on both sides had fractured. Not surprising. It was near impossible to maintain solid battle lines with all of that power being flung back and forth. Bands of soldiers scrambled about seeking cover in blown-out holes in the rock. Others protected groups of channelers. Nearby, women and men roamed about in small groups, destroying soldiers with fire and lightning. These were what Galad hunted. He raised his sword, pointing at a trio of Sharan women holding at the top of the heights. He and his men were more than halfway up the slope. Three would be difficult. They turned their attention on a small band of men wearing the flame of Tarballon. Lightning struck the unfortunate soldiers. Galad held up four fingers. Plan four. He leaped out of his hollow and dashed toward the three women. His men waited a count of five, then followed behind. The women saw him. If they'd remained turned away, Galad would have gained the advantage. One raised a hand and summoned fire, hurling the weave at him. The flame struck him, and though he could feel its heat, the weave unraveled and dissipated, leaving him singed, but mostly unharmed. The Sharon's eyes opened with shock. That look was becoming familiar to Galad now. It was the look of a soldier whose sword had broken in battle, the look of one who had seen something that should not be. What did you do when the one power failed, the thing you relied upon to raise you above common folk? You died. Galad's sword took the woman's head off as one of her companions tried to seize him with air. He felt the metal grow cold at his chest and sensed the rush of air moving around him. A poor choice, Galad thought, ramming his sword into the chest of a second woman. The third proved smarter, and she slammed him with a large rock. He barely raised his shield before the rock smashed into his arm, throwing him backward. The woman raised another stone right as Galad's team hit her. She fell to their swords. Galad caught his breath, his head back, pain radiating from the impact of the rock. He groaned, sitting up. Nearby, his men hacked at the third Sharn woman's body. They didn't need to be so thorough, but some children had strange ideas about what Aes Sedai could do. He'd caught Laird cutting off one of the Sharn woman's heads to bury it separate from the body. Unless you did that, Laird claimed, they would return to life at the next full moon. As the men butchered the other two corpses, Gulliver came over and offered Galad a hand.
"Light burn me," Gulliver said, a wide grin splitting his bearded face. "If this isn't the finest work we've ever done, my lord captain commander, I don't know what is."
Galad stood up.
"It was what must be done, child Gulliver."
"I wish it had to be done more often. This is what the children have awaited for centuries. You are the first to deliver it. The light illumine you, Galad Damodred. The light illumine you."
"May the light illumine a day when men need not kill at all," Galad said tiredly. "It is not fitting to take joy in death."
"Of course, my lord captain commander,"
Gulliver continued, grinning. Galad looked across the bloody pandemonium of the western slope of the heights. The lights and Cawthon could make some sense of this battle, for Galad certainly could not.
"Lord captain commander!"
a frightened voice cried. Galad spun about, hand on his sword. It was Alhanra, one of his scouts.
"What is it, child Alhanra?"
Galad asked as the spindly man ran up. No horses. They were on an incline, and the animals would not have reacted well to the lightning. Better to trust to one's own feet.
"You need to see this, my lord,"
Alhanra said, panting.
It's your brother."
"Gawain?"
"Impossible."
"No," he thought. "Not impossible. He would be with Egwene, fighting on their front."
Galad ran after Alhanra, Gulliver and the others falling in around him. Gawain's body lay ashen-faced in a gap between two rocks on the top of the heights. Nearby, a horse was munching on grass, a trail of blood streaming down its side. By the looks of it, not the horse's blood. Galad knelt down beside the younger man's corpse. Gawain had not died easily. But what of Egwene?
"Peace, brother," Galad said, resting a hand on the body. "May the light..."
"Galad?"
Gawain whispered, his eyes fluttering open.
"Gawain?"
Galad asked, shocked. Gawain had a nasty gut wound. He wore some strange rings. There was blood everywhere. His hand, chest, his entire body. How could the man still be alive?
"The water bond," he realized. "We need to carry you to a healer, one of the Aes Sedai."
He reached into the hollow, scooping up Gawain.
"Galad, I failed."
Gawain stared at the sky, eyes blank.
"You did well."
"No, I failed. I should have stayed with her. I killed Hamar. Did you know that? I killed him. Light. I should have picked a side."
Galad cradled his brother and began running along the slope toward the Aes Sedai. He tried to shelter Gawain amid the attacks of channelers. After only a few moments, an explosion of earth ripped up among the children, flinging them aside, tumbling Galad to the ground. He dropped Gawain as he collapsed to the earth beside him. Gawain trembled, eyes staring distantly. Galad crawled over and tried to pick him up again, but Gawain grabbed his arm, meeting his eyes.
I did love her, Galad. Tell her.
If you are truly bonded, then she knows.
This will hurt her,
Gawain said through pale lips.
And at the end of it, I failed to kill him.
Him?
Dim Andred,
Gawain whispered.
I tried to kill him, but I wasn't good enough. I've never been quite good enough.
Galad found himself in a very cold place. He had seen men die. He had lost friends. This hurt more. Light, but it did. He had loved his brother, loved him deeply. And Gawain, unlike Elaine, had returned the sentiment.
I will bring you to safety, Gawain,
Galad said, picking him up, shocked to find tears in his eyes.
I will not be left without a brother.
Gawain coughed.
You won't be. You have another brother, Galad. One you do not know. A son of Tigraine, who went into the waste. Son of a maiden, born on Dragon Mount. Oh, light. Don't hate him, Galad,
Gawain whispered.
I always hated him. But I stopped. I stopped.
Gawain's eyes stopped moving. Galad felt for a pulse, then sat back, looking down at his dead brother. The bandage Gawain had made for himself at his side seeped blood into the dry ground below, which hungrily soaked it up. Gulliver moved up to him, helping Alhanra, whose blackened face and burned clothing smelled of smoke from the lightning strike.
Take the wounded to safety, Gulliver,
Galad said, standing. He reached up and felt the medallion at his neck.
Take all of the men, and go.
And you, Lord Captain Commander?
Gulliver asked.
I will do what needs to be done,
Galad said, cold inside. Cold as winter steel.
I will bring light to the shadow. I will bring justice to the Forsaken.
Gawain's thread of life vanished. Egwene lurched to a stop on the battlefield. Something severed within her. It was as if a knife suddenly tore into her and scooped out the piece of Gawain inside, leaving only emptiness. She screamed, falling to her knees. No. No, it couldn't be. She could feel him just ahead. She'd been running for him. She could... He was gone. Egwene howled, opening herself to the one power and drawing in as much as she could hold. She let it out as a wall of flames toward the Sharans who were all around now. They had once held the heights, the Aes Sedai below, but it was madness now. She assailed them with the power, clutching Vora's Sangreal. She would destroy them. Light! It hurt! It hurt so badly! Mother! Sylviana cried, seizing her arm. You are out of control, Mother! You will kill our own people! Please! Egwene breathed in gasps. Nearby, a group of white cloaks stumbled by, carrying wounded down the hillside. So close! Oh, Light! He was gone! Mother? Sylviana said. Egwene barely heard. She touched her face and found tears there. She had been bold before. She had claimed she could keep fighting through the loss. How naive that was. She let the fire of Saidar die within her. With that gone, life went out of her. She slumped to the side and felt hands carrying her away. Through a gateway, off the battlefield.
Tam used his last arrow to save a white cloak. It wasn't something he'd have ever imagined himself doing, but there he was. The wolfish Trolloc stumbled back with the arrow through its eye, refusing to go down until the young White Cloak pulled himself from the mud and struck at its knees. His men were now positioned on the catwalks of the palisade, shooting volleys of arrows at the Trollocs that had surged across the riverbed here. Their numbers were depleted, but there were still so many of them. Until this point, the battle had been going well. Tam's combined forces spread out mightily along the river on the Shinaran side. Downriver, the Legion of the Dragon, crossbow banners, and heavy cavalry stemmed the Trolloc advance. The same events were being played out here, farther upriver, with archers, foot soldiers, and cavalry stopping the Trolloc incursion at the riverbed, until the supplies began to dwindle, and Tam was forced to withdraw his men to the relative safety of the palisade. Tam looked to the side. Abel held up his bow, shrugging. He was out of arrows as well. All up and down the catwalk, the two riversmen held up their bows. No arrows.
"No more will be coming," Abel said softly. "The lad said that batch was the last."
The White Cloak army fought desperately, mixed with members of Perrin's Wolf Guard, but they were being pushed back from the riverbed in droves. They fought on three sides, and another force of Trollocs had just swung around to box them in entirely. The banner of Gildan flew closer to the ruins. Arganda held that position along with Narel and the remnants of the Winged Guard. If this were any other battle, Tam would have had his men save their arrows to cover a retreat. There would be no retreat this day, and the order to loose had been the right one. The lads had taken their time with each shot. They'd likely killed thousands of Trollocs during the hours of fighting. But what was an archer without his bow?
"Still a Two Rivers man," Tam thought, "and still not willing to let this battle be lost." "Off the catwalks and form up with weapons," Tam called to the lads. "Leave the bows here. We will fetch them when more arrows come our way."
More arrows wouldn't come, but the Two Rivers men would be happier pretending that they might go back to their bows. They formed up into ranks, as Tam had taught them, armed with spears, axes, swords, even some scythes. Everything and anything they'd had on hand, along with shields for those with axes or swords, and good leather armor for them all. No pikes, unfortunately. After the heavy infantry had been outfitted, there hadn't been any of those left.
"Stay tight," Tam said to them. "Form into two wedges. We'll push into the Trollocs around the White Cloaks."
Best thing to do, at least the best Tam could come up with, was to hit those Trollocs that had just come around the back of the White Cloaks, fragment them, and help the White Cloaks break free. The men nodded, though they probably had very little understanding of the tactics. It didn't matter, so long as they kept disciplined ranks as Tam had taught them. They started forward, running, and Tam was reminded of another battlefield. Snow cutting into his face, blown by terrible winds. In a way, that battlefield had begun this all. Now it ended here. Tam placed himself at the point of the first wedge, then put Dioan, a man from Devon Ride who had served in the Andoran army, at the point of the other. Tam guided his men forward briskly, not letting them or himself dwell too much on what was about to happen. As they approached the hulking Trollocs with their swords, polearms, and battle axes, Tam sought the flame in the void. Nervousness vanished. All emotion evaporated. He unsheathed the sword Rand had given him, the one with the dragons painted on the sheath. It was as fine a weapon as Tam had ever seen. Those folds in the metal whispered of ancient origin. It seemed too good a weapon for Tam. He had felt that way about every sword he'd ever used.
"Remember, hold formation," Tam yelled back at his men. "Don't let them break us apart. If someone falls, one man steps up and takes his place while another pulls the fallen man into the center of the wedge."
They nodded back at him, and then they hit the Trollocs in the back, where they had surrounded the Children of Light at the river. His formations hit, pounding forward. The huge Trollocs turned to fight.
Fortuona waved away the Sojin who tried to replace her regal clothing. She smelled of smoke from the fire, and her arms had been burned and scored in several places. She would not accept Damani healing. Fortuona thought healing to be a useful development, and some of her people were changing their attitudes toward it, but she was not certain the Empress should submit to it. Besides, her wounds were not dire. The Death Watch guards kneeling before her would need some form of punishment. This was the second time they had allowed an assassin to reach her, and while she did not blame them for the failure, to deny them punishment would be to deny them their honor. It twisted her heart about, but she knew what she would have to do. She gave the order herself. Seleucia, as her voice, should have done it, but Seleucia's wounds were being tended. And Kharid deserved this small honor of receiving his execution order from Fortuona herself.
"You will go to engage the enemy Marath Damani directly," she ordered Kharid. "Each of you who was on duty, fight valiantly for the Empire there and try to slay the enemy's Marath Damani."
She could see Kharid relax. It was a way to continue serving. He would probably have fallen on his own sword if given the choice himself. This was a mercy. She turned away from the man who had cared for her during her youth, the man who had defied what was expected of him. All for her. She would find her own penance for what she must do later. At this point, she would grant him the honor she could.
"Darbinda," she said,
turning to the woman who insisted upon calling herself Min, despite the honor of a new name that Fortuona had given her. It meant Girl of Pictures in the old tongue.
"You have saved my life and possibly that of the Prince of the Ravens. I name you of the Blood, Doomseer. Let your name be venerated for generations to come."
Darbinda folded her arms. How like Notai she was. Stubbornly humble, these mainlanders. They were actually proud, proud of their low-born heritage. Baffling. Notai himself sat on a nearby stump, receiving battle reports and snapping out orders. The Aes Sedai battle for the Western Heights was descending into chaos. He met her eyes across the small gap between them, then nodded once. If there was a spy, and Fortuona would be surprised if there was not one, then now was the time to mislead them. Everyone who had survived the attack was gathered around. Fortuona had insisted on having them close, ostensibly for the purpose of rewarding those who had served her well and meeting punishment to those who had not. Each and every guard, servant, and noble could hear her as she spoke.
"Not I," she said. "We have yet to discuss what I should do about you. The Death Watch Guard has charge of my safety, but you have charge of the defense of this camp. If you suspected that our command post was not safe, why did you not speak earlier?"
"Are you bloody suggesting that this is my fault?"
Notai stood up and stilled the scout's reports with a gesture.
"I gave you command here," Fortuona said. "The ultimate responsibility for failure is yours, then. Is it not?"
Nearby, General Galgan frowned. He did not see it this way. Others looked toward Notai with accusing eyes. Noble sycophants. They would blame him because he wasn't born of the Seanchan. "Impressive," that Notai had converted Galgan so quickly. Or was Galgan telegraphing his emotions purposefully? Was he the spy? He could have been manipulating Suroth, or simply have been a redundant plant if Suroth failed.
"I'm not taking responsibility for this, Tuon," Notai said. "You were the one who bloody insisted on watching from the camp when you could have been somewhere safe."
"Perhaps I should have done just that," she replied coldly. "This entire battle has been a disaster. You lose ground each moment. You talk lightly and joke, refusing proper protocol. I do not think you approach this with the solemnity befitting your station."
Notai laughed. It was a loud, genuine laugh. He was good at this. Fortuona thought she was the only one who saw the twin lines of smoke rising exactly behind him from the heights. An appropriate omen for Nautai. A large gamble would yield large rewards, or a great cost.
"I've had it with you," Nautai said, waving a hand at her. "You and your bloody Shanshan rules just keep getting in the way."
"Then I have had it with you as well," she said, raising her head. "We should never have joined this battle. We would be better preparing to defend our own lands to the southwest. I will not let you throw away the lives of my soldiers."
"Go then," Nautai snarled. "What do I care?"
She spun about, stalking away.
"Come," she said to the others. "Gather our Damani. All but those Death Watch guards will travel to our army's camp at the Aranin. Then we will all return to Ebu Dar. We will fight the true last battle there once these fools have bloodied the Shadow Spawn for us."
Her people followed. Had the ploy been convincing? The spy had seen her consigned to death, men who loved her. Would that show that she was reckless? Reckless and self-important enough to pull her troops away from Nautai? It was plausible enough. In a way, she wanted to do as she said, and fight in the south instead. To do that, of course, would be to ignore the breaking sky, the trembling land, and the Dragon Reborn's fight. These were not omens she could let pass her by. The spy did not know that. It could not know her. The spy would see a foolish young woman, foolish enough to want to fight on her own. So she hoped.
The Dark One spun a web of possibility around Rand. Rand knew this struggle between them. The fight for what could be was vital to the last battle. Rand could not weave the future. He was not the wheel, not anything like it. For everything that had happened to him, he was still merely a man. Yet in him was the hope of humankind. Humankind had a destiny, a choice for its future. The path they would take, this battle would decide it. His will clashing with that of the Dark One. As of yet, what could be might become what would be. Breaking now would be to let the Dark One choose that future.
"Behold,"
the Dark One said as the lines of light came together and Rand entered another world. A world that had not yet happened, but a world that very well might soon come to be. Rand frowned, looking up at the sky. It was not red in this vision, the landscape not ruined. He stood in Camelin, much as he knew it. Oh, there were differences. Steam wagons rattled down the streets, mingling with the traffic of horse-drawn carriages and crowds walking. The city had expanded beyond the new wall. He could see that from the height of the central hill he stood upon. He could even make out the place where Telmanis had blown a hole in the wall. It had not been repaired. Instead, the city had spilled out through it. Buildings covered what had once been fields outside. Rand frowned, turning and walking down the street. What game was the Dark One playing? Surely this normal, even prosperous city would not be part of his plans for the world. The people were clean and did not look oppressed. He saw no sign of the depravity that had marked the previous world the Dark One had created for him. Curious, he walked up to a stand where a woman sold fruit. The slender woman gave him an inviting smile, gesturing toward her wares.
"Welcome, good sir. I am Renelle, and my shop is a second home to all seeking the finest of fruits from around the world. I have fresh peaches from Tyr."
"Peaches?" Rand said aghast. Everyone knew those were poisonous.
"Ha! Fear not, good sir. These have had the toxin removed. These are as safe as I am honest."
The woman smiled, taking a bite of one to prove it. As she did, a grubby hand appeared from under the fruit stand. An urchin hid underneath, a young boy that Rand had not noticed earlier. The little boy snatched a red fruit of a type Rand did not recognize, then dashed off. He was so thin that Rand could see his ribs pressing against the skin of his too small form, and he ran on legs so slender it was a wonder the boy could walk. The woman continued smiling at Rand as she reached to her side, took out a small rod with a lever at the side for her finger. She pulled the lever, and the rod cracked. The urchin died in a spray of blood. He fell sprawling to the ground. People moved around him in the flow of traffic, though somebody, a man with many guards, did scoop up the piece of fruit. He wiped the blood off of it and took a bite, continuing on his way. A few moments later, a steam wagon rolled over the corpse, pressing it into the muddy roadway. Rand was aghast, looked back at the woman. She tucked away her weapon, a smile still on her face.
"Were you looking for any type of fruit in particular?" she asked him.
"You just killed that child." The woman frowned in confusion.
"Yes. Did it belong to you, good sir?"
"No, but..." "Light." The woman didn't show a hint of remorse or concern. Rand turned, and nobody else seemed to care in the slightest about what had happened.
"Sir?"
the woman asked.
"I feel as if I should know you. That is fine clothing, if a little out of style. To which faction do you belong?"
"Faction?" Rand asked, looking back.
"And where are your guards?" the woman asked.
"A man as rich as you has them, of course." Rand met her eyes, then ran to the side as the woman reached for her weapon again. He ducked around a corner. The look in her eyes, utter lack of any kind of human sympathy or concern. She'd have killed him in a moment without a second thought. He knew it. Others on the street saw him. They nudged companions, gesturing toward him. One man he passed called out,
"Speak your faction!"
Others gave chase. Rand ducked around another corner. The one power. Dared he use it? He didn't know what was going on in this world. As before, he had trouble separating himself from the vision. He knew that it wasn't completely real, but he couldn't help believing himself part of it. He didn't risk the one power and trusted his own feet for now. He did not know Camelin terribly well, but he did remember this area. If he reached the end of this street and turned, yes, there. Ahead he saw a familiar building with a sign out front showing a man kneeling before a woman with red gold hair. The Queen's Blessing. Rand reached the front doors as those chasing him piled around the corner behind. They stopped as Rand scrambled up to the door, passing a brutish fellow standing to the side. A new door guard? Rand did not know him. Did Basil Gill still own the inn, or had it changed hands? Rand burst into the large common room, heart thumping. Several men nursing pitchers of afternoon ale looked up at him. Rand was in luck. Basil Gill himself stood behind the counter, rubbing a cup with a cloth.
"Master Gill,"
Rand said. The stout man turned, frowning.
"Do I know you?"
He looked Rand up and down.
"My lord?"
"It's me, Rand."
Gill cocked his head, then grinned.
"Oh, you! I'd forgotten you. Your friend isn't with you, is he? The one with the dark look to his eyes?"
So people did recognize Rand as the dragon reborn in this place. What had the Dark One done to them?
"I need to speak with you, Master Gill,"
Rand said, striding toward a private dining chamber.
"What is it, lad?"
Gill asked, following after.
"Are you in trouble of some sort? Again?"
Rand shut the door after Master Gill.
"What age are we in?"
"The fourth age, of course."
"So the last battle happened?"
"Yes. And we won,"
Gill said. He looked at Rand closely, narrowing his eyes.
"Are you all right, son? How could you not know?"
"I spent my time in the woods these last years," Rand said, "frightened of what was happening."
"Ah, then. You don't know about the factions?"
"No."
"Light, son. You're in some meaty trouble. Here, I'll get you a faction symbol. You'll need one in a hurry."
Gill pulled open the door and bustled out. Rand folded his arms, noticing with displeasure that the fireplace in the room contained a nothingness beyond it.
"What have you done to them?" Rand demanded.
I let them think they won.
Why?
Many who follow me do not understand tyranny.
What does that have to do with...
Rand cut off as Gil returned. He bore no faction symbol, whatever that was. Instead, he'd gathered 3 thick-necked guards. He pointed in toward Rand.
Gil,
Rand said, backing away and seizing the source.
What are you doing?
Well, I figure that coat will sell for something,
Gil said. He didn't sound the least bit apologetic.
And so you'll rob me?
Well, yes,
Gil seemed confused.
Why wouldn't I?
The thugs stepped into the room, looking Rand over with careful eyes. They carried cudgels.
Because of the law, Rand said.
Why would there be laws against theft?
Gil asked, shaking his head.
What manner of person are you to think such things? If a man cannot protect what he has, why should he have it? If a man cannot defend his life, what good is it to him?
Gil waved the 3 men forward. Rand bound them in cords of air.
You took their consciences, didn't you?
He asked softly. Gil's eyes widened at the use of the one power. He tried to run. Rand grabbed him in cords of air as well.
Men who think they are oppressed will someday fight. I will remove from them not just their will to resist, but the very suspicion that something is wrong.
So you leave them without compassion?
Rand demanded, looking into Gil's eyes. The man seemed terrified that Rand would kill him, as did the 3 thugs. No remorse, not a bit of it.
Compassion is not needed.
Rand felt deathly cold.
This is different from the world you showed me before.
What I showed before is what men expect. It is the evil they think they fight. But I will make a world where there is not good or evil. There is only me.
Do your servants know?
Rand whispered.
The ones you named Chosen. They think they fight to become lords and rulers over a world of their own making. Instead, you will give them this. The same world, except one without light.
There is only me.
No light. No love of man. The horror of it sank deep within Rand, shaking him. This was one of the possibilities that the Dark One could choose, if he won. It didn't mean he would, or that it had to happen, but...
Oh, light, this was terrible.
Far more terrible than a world of captives. Far more terrible than a dark land with a broken landscape. This was true horror. This was a full corruption of the world. It was taking everything beautiful from it, leaving behind only a husk. A pretty husk, but still a husk. Rand would rather live 1,000 years of torture, retaining the piece of himself that gave him the capacity for good, than live a moment in this world without light. He turned, enraged upon the darkness. It consumed the far wall, growing larger.
You make a mistake, Shaitan,
Rand yelled at that nothingness.
You think to make me despair? You think to shatter my will? This will not do it. I swear to you. This makes me sure to fight.
Something rumbled inside of the Dark One. Rand yelled, pushing outward with his will, shattering the dark world of lies and men who would kill without empathy. It exploded into threads, and Rand was once again in the place outside of time, the pattern rippling around him.
You show me your true heart,
Rand demanded of the nothingness as he seized those threads.
I will show you mine, Shaitan. There is an opposite to this lightless world you create. A world without shadow.
Matt stalked away, calming his anger. Tuon had seemed really angry at him. Light. She would come back when he needed her to, would she not? Matt, Min said, hurrying up beside him.
Go with her, Matt said. Keep an eye on her for me, Min.
But
she doesn't need much protecting, Matt said. She's a strong one. Bloody ashes, but she is. She does need watching, though. She worries me, Min. Anyway, I have this bloody war to win. I can't do that and go with her, so would you go and watch her, please?
Min slowed, then gave him an unexpected hug.
Luck, Matrim Cawthon.
Luck, Min Farshaw, Matt said.
He let her go, then shouldered his Ashandarai. The Shonshan had begun leaving Dashar Nob, pulling back to the Aranin before leaving the field of Merilor altogether. Demandred would let them go. He would be a fool not to.
Blood and bloody ashes, what was Matt getting himself into?
He had just sent away a good quarter of his troops.
They'll come back, he thought.
If his gamble worked. If the dice fell as he needed them. Only this battle was not a game of dice. There was too much subtlety to it for that. It was cards, if anything. Matt usually wanted cards. Usually. To his right, a group of men in dark Shonshan armor marched toward the battlefield.
Hey, Kareed!
Matt yelled. The large man gave Matt a dark look. Suddenly, Matt knew what an ingot of metal felt like when Perrin eyed it, hefting a hammer. Kareed stalked up, and though he obviously was making an effort to keep his face calm, Matt could feel the thunder coming off him.
Thank you, Kareed said, voice stiff, for helping protect the Empress. May she live forever.
You think I should have kept her someplace secure, Matt said. Not at the command post.
It is not my place to question one of the blood, Great One, Kareed said.
You're not questioning me, Matt said. You're thinking of sticking something sharp in me. Entirely different.
Kareed breathed out a long, deep breath.
Excuse me, Great One, he said, turning to leave. I must take my men and die.
I don't think so, Matt said. You're coming with me.
Kareed turned back toward him.
The Empress, may she live forever, ordered
you to the front lines, Matt said, shading his eye as he scanned the riverbed, swarming with Trollocs. Great. Where do you bloody think I'm going?
You ride to battle, Kareed asked.
I was thinking more of a saunter, Matt said. He shook his head. I need a feel for what Demandred is doing. Matt said, shading his eye as he scanned the riverbed, swarming with Trollocs. Great. Where do you bloody think I'm going?
You ride to battle, Kareed asked.
I was thinking more of a saunter, Matt said. He shook his head. I need a feel for what Demandred is doing. I'm going out there, Kareed, and putting you fellows between me and the Trollocs sounds delightful. Are you coming?
Kareed did not reply, though he did not continue walking away either.
Look, what are your choices? Matt asked. Ride out there and die for really no purpose? Or come try to keep me alive for your Empress? I'm almost certain that she's fond of me. Maybe. She's a hard one to read, Tuan is.
You do not call her by that name, Kareed said.
I'll call her what I bloody well want.
Not if we're to come with you, Kareed said. If I am to ride with you, Prince of the Ravens, I would not have my men hearing such from your lips. It would be a bad omen.
Well, we wouldn't want any of those, Matt said. Right then, Kareed. Let's dive back into this mess and see what we can do. In Fortuona's name.
Tam raised his sword as if to begin a duel, but found no honorable foes here. Only grunting, howling, ferocious Trollocs, drawn away from the beleaguered White Cloaks at this battle near the ruins. The Trollocs turned on the Two Rivers men and attacked. Tam, holding the point of the wedge, fell into reed and wind. He refused to take a single step backward. He bent this way and that, but held firm as he broke the Trolloc line, slashing with his sword in quick movements. The men of the Two Rivers pushed forward, a thorn to the Dark One's foot and a bramble to his hand. In the chaos that followed, they shouted and cursed and fought to drive the Trollocs apart. But soon their focus turned to holding their ground. The Trollocs surged around the men. The wedge formation, normally an offensive tactic, worked well here, too. Trollocs moved down the sides of the wedge, taking hits from the Two Rivers men with their axes, swords, and spears. Tam let the lad's training guide them. He would have preferred to be in the center of the wedge, calling out encouragement, as Danil now did. But he was one of the few who had real battle training, and the wedge formation depended on having a point who could hold steady. So hold steady he did. Calm within the void, he let the Trollocs break upon him. He moved from shake dew from the branch to apple blossoms in the wind to stones fall in the pond, all forms that stabilized him in one position while fighting multiple opponents. Despite practice over the last few months, Tam wasn't nearly as strong as he had been in his youth. Fortunately, a reed did not need strength. He was not as practiced as he once had been, but no reed practiced how to bend in the wind. It simply did. Years of maturing, years of age, had brought Tam an understanding of the void. He understood it now, better than he ever had. Years teaching Rand responsibility, years of living without carry, years of listening to the wind blow when the leaves rustle. Tam Althor became the void. He brought it to the Trollocs, showed it to them, and sent them into its depths. He danced around a goat-featured Trolloc, sweeping his sword to the side and slicing the beast's leg at the heel. It stumbled, and Tam turned, letting the men behind take it. He flashed his sword up, the weapon trailing blood, and sprayed the dark droplets across the eyes of a charging Trolloc with nightmare features. It howled, blinded, and Tam flowed forward, arms out, and opened its stomach below the breastplate. It stumbled in front of a third Trolloc, who brought an axe down toward Tam, but hit its ally instead. Each step was part of a dance, and Tam invited the Trollocs to join him. He had only fought like this once before, long ago, but memory was something that the void did not allow. He did not think of other times. He did not think of anything. If he knew that he'd done this once before, it was because of the resonance of his motions, an understanding that seemed to permeate his muscles themselves. Tam stabbed the neck of a Trolloc with a face that was nearly human, with only a little too much hair on its cheeks. It fell backward and collapsed, and Tam suddenly found no more foes. He stopped, bringing his sword up, feeling a soft wind blow across him. The dark beasts were thundering away downriver in a rout, chased by horsemen flying Borderlander flags. Shortly they would hit a wall of troops, the Legion of the Dragon, and be crushed between them and the pursuing Borderlanders. Tam cleaned his blade, leaving the void. The gravity of the situation hit him. Light. His men should be dead. If those Borderlanders hadn't arrived... He placed his sword back into its lacquered sheath. The red and gold dragon caught sunlight, sparkling, though Tam wouldn't have thought there was anything to catch with that cloud cover above. He searched for the sun, and found it, behind the clouds, nearly at the horizon. It was almost night. Fortunately, it looked like the Trollocs here at the battle by the ruins were finally breaking. Already weakened severely by the drawn-out river crossing, they now crumbled as Land's men hit them from behind. In a short time, it was done. Tam had held. Nearby, a black horse trotted up. Its rider, Lan Mandragoran, with standard-bearer and guards behind, looked over the Two Rivers men.
"I had long wondered," Lan said to Tam, "about the man who had given Rand that heron-marked blade. I wondered if he had truly earned it. Now I know." Rand raised his own sword in salute. Tam turned back toward his men, an exhausted, bloodied group clutching weapons. The path of their wedge showed easily on the trampled plain. Dozens of Trollocs lay behind where the wedge had cut into them. To the north, the men of the second wedge raised their weapons. They had been pushed back nearly to the forest, but they'd held there, and some had survived. Tam couldn't help but see that dozens of good folk had died. His exhausted men sat down right there in the battlefield, surrounded by corpses. Some weakly began tying their own bandages or seeing to the wounded they'd pulled into the interior of the wedge. To the south, Tam spotted a dismaying sight.
Were those the Shan-Chan pulling out from their camp at Dasharnab?
Have we won, then?
Tam asked.
Far from it, Lan said. We've seized this part of the river, but it is the lesser fight. Demandred pressed his trollocs hard here to keep us from drawing resources to the larger battle at the ford downriver.
Lan turned his horse.
Gather your men, Blademaster. This battle will not end with the setting sun. You'll be needed again in the coming hours. Tashar, Manetharan.
Lan thundered toward his borderlanders.
Tashar Malkir!
Tam called after them, belatedly.
So, we're not done yet? Danil asked.
No, lad, we're not. But we'll take a break, get the men healed, and find some food.
He saw gateways opening beside the field. Cawthon had been smart enough to send a means for Tam to take his wounded to Mayen. People poured through the openings. Hundreds of them. Thousands. Tam frowned. Nearby, the White Cloaks were picking themselves up. They'd been hit hard by the Trolloc attacks, but Tam's arrival had kept them from being destroyed. Arganda's force was forming up at the ruins, and the Wolf Guard hoisted their flag high, bloodied, heaps of Trolloc corpses surrounding them. Tam trudged across the field. Now his limbs felt like dead weights. He felt more exhausted than if he'd spent a month pulling stumps. At the first of the gateways, he found Berylaine herself, standing with a few Aes Sedai. The beautiful woman was terribly out of place here in this mud and death. Her gown of black and silver, the diadem in her hair. Light. She didn't belong here.
Tam Althor, she said. You command this force?
Near enough, Tam said. Pardon, my lady first, but who are all of these people?
The refugees from Camelin, Berylaine said. I sent some people to see if they needed healing. They refused it and insisted that I bring them to the battle.
Tam scratched at his head. To the battle? Any man and many women who could hold a sword had already been drawn into the army. The people he saw coming through the gateways were mostly children and the elderly, and some matrons who had remained back to care for the young.
Pardon, Tam said, but this is a killing field.
So I tried to explain,
Berylaine said, a hint of exasperation in her voice.
They claim they can be of use. Better than waiting out the last battle huddled together on the road to Whitebridge, so they say.
Tam watched, frowning, as children scattered onto the field. His stomach lurched at them investigating the gruesome dead, and many did shy back at first. Others began picking through the fallen, looking for signs of those people who were still alive and could be healed. A few aged soldiers who had been set to guard the refugees went among them, watching for Trollocs that weren't quite dead. Women and children began to pick arrows out from among the fallen. That would be helpful. Very helpful. With surprise, Tam saw hundreds of tinkers pour out of one gateway. They went searching for the wounded under the direction of several Yellow Sisters. Tam found himself nodding. It still worried him, allowing the children to see such sights.
Well, he thought, he'll see a worse sight if we fail here.
If they wanted to be of use, they should be allowed.
Tell me, Tam Althor, Berylaine asked, is Galad Damodred well? I see his men here, but not his banner.
He was called to other duties, milady first, Tam said. Downriver. I haven't heard from him in hours, I'm afraid.
Ah. Well, let's heal and feed your men. Perhaps word of Lord Damodred will be forthcoming.
Elaine touched Gareth Bryn's cheek softly. She closed his eyes, one, then the other, before nodding to the soldiers who had found his body. They carried Bryn away, legs dangling over the edge of his shield, head hanging down on the other side. He just went riding off screaming, Birgitta said. Right into the enemy lines. There was no stopping him. Swan is dead, Elaine said, feeling an almost overpowering sense of loss. Swan. Swan had always been so strong. With effort, Elaine stilled her emotions. She had to keep her attention on the battle. Is there word from the command post? The camp at Dashar Nob has been abandoned, Birgitta said. I don't know where Corfun is. The Shanshan have forsaken us. Raise my banner high, Elaine said. Until we hear from Matt, I'm taking command of this battlefield. Bring forward my advisers. Birgitta moved to give the orders. Elaine's guardswomen watched, shuffling nervously, as the Trollocs pushed against the Andorans at the river. They'd totally filled the corridor between heights and bogs and threatened to spill out onto Shinaran soil. Part of Egwene's army had hit the Trollocs from the other side of the corridor, which had taken some pressure off her own troops for a time. But more Trollocs had attacked from above, and it looked as if Egwene's men were getting the worst of it. Elaine had had solid lessons in battlefield tactics, though little experience on the field, and she could see how badly things were going. Yes, she had received news that the Trollocs' position upriver had been destroyed by the arrival of Lan and the Borderlanders, but that brought scant relief with the situation here at the ford. The sun began to slip beneath the horizon. The Trollocs made no sign of pulling back, and her soldiers reluctantly began to light bonfires and torches. Organizing her men into square formations made for better defense, but it meant giving up any hope of pushing forward. The Aiel fought here as well, as did the Kyrianin. But those pike squares were the core of their battle plan. They're slowly surrounding us, she thought. If the Trollocs did so, they could squeeze until the Andorans popped. Light, this is bad. The sun made a sudden blazing fire behind the horizon clouds. With night, the Trollocs gained another advantage. The air had grown cold in the advent of darkness. Her early assumptions that this battle would last days now seemed silly. The shadow pushed with all of its might. Humankind did not have days remaining, but hours. Majesty, Captain Gaibon said, riding up with her commanders. Their dented armor and bloodied tabards proved that nobody, not even the senior officers, could be spared from direct fighting. Advice, Elaine said, looking at him, Theodore, commander of the cavalry, and Birgitta, who was captain general. Retreat? Gaibon asked. Do you really think we could disengage? Birgitta replied. Gaibon hesitated, then shook his head. Right then, Elaine said. How do we win?
We hold, said Theodore. We hope the White Tower can win their fight against the Sharan channelers and come to our aid.
I don't like just sitting here, Birgitta said. A blazing beam of white-hot fire sliced through Elaine's guards, vaporizing dozens of them. Gaibon's horse vanished beneath him, though he narrowly missed being hit himself. Elaine's horse reared. Swearing, she wrestled her mount under control. That had been balefire.
Luz Theron!
A power-enhanced voice rang over the field.
I hunt the woman you love. Come to me, coward. Fight!
The earth exploded near Elaine, heaving her standard-bearer into the air, the flag bursting into flames. This time Elaine was thrown from horseback, and she hit hard, grunting. My babes! She groaned, rolling over as hands grabbed her. Birgitta. The woman hauled Elaine into the saddle behind her, helped by several guardswomen. Can you channel? Birgitta asked. No, never mind, they'll be watching for that. Celebrane, raise another banner. Ride down river with a squadron of guards. I will take the queen the other way. The woman standing beside Birgitta's horse saluted. It was a death sentence. Birgitta, no, Elaine said. Dimondred has decided you'll draw out the dragon reborn for him,
Birgitta said, turning her horse. I'm not about to let that happen.
Hiya!
She pushed her horse into a gallop as lightning struck Elaine's guards, blowing bodies into the air. Elaine ground her teeth. Her armies were in danger of being overwhelmed, surrounded, all while Demondred laid down blast after blast of bale fire, lightning, and weaves of earth. That man was as dangerous as an army himself. I can't leave, Elaine said from behind Birgitta.
Yes, you can, and you are, she replied gruffly as their horse galloped on. If Matt has fallen, Light said that isn't the case, then we'll need to set up a new command post. There's a reason Demondred struck at Jashar Nob and then directly at you. He's trying to destroy our command structure. Your duty is to assume command from someplace safe and secret. Once we're far enough away that Demondred's scouts can't sense you channeling, we'll make a gateway and you will be back in control. Right now, though, Elaine, you need to shut your mouth and let me protect you.
She was right. Burn her, she was. Elaine hung on as Birgitta galloped across the battlefield, her horse churning clods of dirt behind them in a flight toward safety.
At least he's making it easy to find him, Galad thought as he rode, watching the lines of fire streak from the enemy position toward Elaine's army. Galad's heels dug into the flanks of his stolen horse, tearing across the heights toward its eastern edge. Over and over he saw Gawain's dying body in his arms.
Face me, Luz Theron!
The thunder of Demandred's shout shook the ground from up ahead. He had taken Galad's brother. Now the monster hunted Galad's sister. The right thing had always seemed clear to Galad before, but never had it felt as right as this. Those streaks of light were like indicators on a map, arrows pointing his way. The light itself guided him. It had prepared him, placed him here at this moment. He ripped through the back lines of the Sharan force to where Demondred stood, just above the riverbed looking down on Elaine's troops. Arrows sank into the earth around him, archers firing, heedless of the risk of hitting their own men. Sword out, Galad pulled his leg from the stirrup, preparing to leap free. An arrow struck the horse. Galad threw himself from the animal. He hit hard, skidding to a stop, and sliced the hand from a crossbowman nearby. A growling male channeler came for him, and the fox-head medallion grew cold against Galad's chest. Galad rammed his blade through the man's neck. The man raved, blood spurting from his neck with each beat of his heart. He didn't seem surprised as he died, just angry. His howls drew more attention.
Demondred! Galad yelled. Demondred, you call for the dragon reborn. You demand to fight him. He is not here. But his brother is. Will you stand against me?
Dozens of crossbows were raised. Behind Galad, his horse collapsed, expelling a bloody froth from its nostrils. Randall Thor, his brother. The shock of Gawain's death had numbed Galad to this revelation. He would have to deal with it eventually if he survived. He still did not know if he would be proud or ashamed. A figure in strange, coin-link armor stepped through the Sharn ranks here. Demondred was a proud man. One needed see only his face to know that. He looked like Althor, actually. They had a similar sense about them. Demondred inspected Galad, who stood with bloody sword out. The dying channeler scraped the ground with clawed fingers before him.
His brother, Demondred said. Son of Tigraine, Galad said, who became a maiden of the spear, who gave birth to my brother on Dragonmount, the tomb of Luz Theron. I had two brothers. You killed the other on this battlefield. You have an interesting artifact, I see, Demondred said as the medallion grew cold again. Surely you don't think that is going to keep you from meeting the same fate as your pathetic brother? The dead one, I mean. Do we fight, Son of Shadows, or do we talk?
Demandred unsheathed his sword, herons on the blade and hilt.
May you give me a better match than your brother, little man. I grow displeased. Luce Theron can hate me or rail against me, but he should not ignore me.
Galad stepped forward into the ring of crossbowmen and channelers. If he won, he would still die. But Light let him take one of the Forsaken with him. It would be a fitting end. Demandred came at him, and the contest began.
Her back pressed against a stalagmite, seeing only by the light of Kalandor reflected against the walls of the cavern, Nynaeve worked to save Alana's life. There were those who, in the White Tower, had mocked her reliance on ordinary healing techniques. What could two hands and thread do that the one power could not? If any of those women had been here instead of Nynaeve, the world would have ended. The conditions were horrible. Little light, no tools besides the implements she kept in her pouch. Still, Nynaeve sewed, using the needle and thread she always carried. She had mixed a draft of herbs for Alana and forced it through her lips. It wouldn't do much, but every little bit might help. It would keep Alana's strength up, help her with the pain, keep her heart from giving out, as Nynaeve worked. The wound was messy, but she had sewn messy wounds before. Though she trembled inside, Nynaeve's hands were steady as she sewed up the wound and coaxed the woman back from the very precipice of death. Rand and Moradin did not move, but she felt something thrumming from them. Rand was fighting, fighting a fight she could not see.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.